This is Transistor.fm.
Hey friend, Levi here. Normally at the start of the show, we'll tell you briefly who the sponsors of this episode are, but I'd like to ask you a quick request instead. Mainly because we don't have any sponsors, but still, if you enjoyed this conversation, if you enjoyed the subject matter, I would love for you to share this episode with a maker in your life that you think might enjoy it as well. It's a small action, but it can really help us get things off the ground, and I would appreciate it. So thank you. I hope you enjoy this, the first episode of the Make Stuff Club. Could you imagine if this podcast chronicled the journey for us taking video back into a place of it just being a hobby and we get other jobs?
Yeah, we just become accountants.
I think accountants is the worst idea you've said on this podcast so far.
I think you're correct.
We would not be good at that.
We'd be horrible accountants.
That would be an interesting outcome of this whole sharing the process of making is, well, you actually decided it'd be better to make just for the joy of it and not for the business of it.
I sometimes do think that might be in the cards for me someday.
Hey, friend. Welcome back to the Make Stuff Club, the show for dysfunctional creatives where the goal is simple. Make good stuff, make some money, and as much as possible, avoid self-sabotaging your work, your relationships, and your life in the process. I'm joined by Jesse Driftwood.
Hello.
A fellow maker of internet videos, chronic procrastinator, and connoisseur of USB-C charging devices.
That is an excellent description.
How are you doing, Jesse?
I'm doing good, actually. I'm doing better.
You're shipping a video very soon. It's about to go live.
Yeah, I thought it was going to go live yesterday, but I didn't hear back from the brand for approval, which I'm sure they'll approve, but you know what that's like.
I started watching that video this morning. I got a minute and a half into it, and I was laughing so much, and my daughter was napping, and Janelle was over here drinking coffee, and she could not figure out why I just burst out laughing.
Okay, I'm curious. I'd love to know what the moment was, but without spoiling it, like if one word, what moment?
Waddle.
Okay, yeah, that's what I figured.
I was just in awe of this moment that you had set up, and I just could not believe the sheer effort to make it happen. And then also just, this is so classic. It's just, It's so classic, Jesse.
Thank you. Yeah, I actually think the video will flop. Like, I know it's not a viral video or anything like that. In fact, I think the weakest part of the video is probably the topic of the video.
Right.
I think the video itself is better than the topic of the video. I don't know what to do about that.
Like, without question, for sure.
Yeah.
Like when I watch this video, and it'll be live now, so you can go over to Jesse's channel and watch it. What is the title you're currently running with?
What is it called? Like Finding Music, The Eternal Struggle, or something like that?
Right, but the journey of watching it is so much better than that title. It is,
yeah.
You made something really beautiful. And I was struck by the text that you sent shortly after about it flopping. And then it kind of, there's this topic that I've been thinking about for myself of the balance between, hey, the things we make, wanting them to not flop, wanting them to do well, but then also just make things that are interesting to us as we make them. And I was listening to an audiobook by Seth Godin.
Purple Cow.
No, not Purple Cow. A new one. And it's one of those books that as I'm listening to it, I'm needing to pause it so frequently because the statements seem to ring so true.
Interesting.
And even before we started hitting record, I kind of wondered, oh, is Jesse going to think that this topic is too posh? It's too... And we're just going to barrel ahead anyways, because I think that'll end up proving the point.
I hope so.
I thought it would be interesting-ish to lead with a question. And my question to you is, Jesse, do you feel like an artist?
No. Ooh, I really didn't think that through.
I believe you.
I think my gut reaction probably speaks more to like an imposter syndrome thing than anything else. This is a funny story. My first studio, it was a shared studio with a bunch of people. And we had actually, I had a friend approach an old church and say like, hey, you have this manse building. Now, for those who don't know, the manse is traditionally like the house that a pastor and his family would live at next to like a cathedral or whatever. Mm-hmm. Now, these aren't really operational anymore, pretty much anywhere to my knowledge. And so this manse building had just become storage. So my friend approached him and said, How would you feel about us turning one of the spare, like the bedrooms upstairs, into shared art studios? And in exchange, we'll provide art services to your congregation. Right. Pretty cool idea. They said yes. A month in, we had an open house. So all these like elderly folks from this cathedral got to walk through and see our art. And at the time, I was mostly just shooting weddings, and I had a bunch of my wedding photography up. And I just remember this sweet old lady. She just goes, "Huh, I didn't know photography was art." And like she, well-meaning, you know, she was being genuine. And I think that's kind of how I feel. There's an element where I'm like, well, you know, I'm not painting. I'm not. And I know, yeah. Rationally, I know that there's not really a difference. And I think the process of creation is the art part. But I don't feel like an artist.
When I think about wedding stuff and the wedding videos that I've made in the past, I do reflect on, I don't know if the videos always felt like art themselves, but the moments that did feel like art was that moment of getting to watch it for the first time with the bride and groom. Mm. That for me was that made all of the work without the pay.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I always overworked these weddings and never got paid enough. That moment was what I craved for, to see them experience the thing that I had crafted for them to relive and experience, especially if I was late on the edit and it was like a year later, because then all the fresh memories are kind of gone and you're teleporting them back to an experience and all their emotions flood back. And it's kind of like a cheat code to feeling like you wrote this really impressive story, but you're just using their story to connect with the perfect audience for that story. And that to me was the art of it.
I don't feel like an artist.
Okay, yeah. I cut you off there as I'm just
answering.
I was about to ask you if you
feel like an artist. You don't. That's your...
I don't.
Why do and you think?
I think because I fall in line with the typical headspace of my brother was an artist. He was the creative one. He was the songwriter, a carver from Abbotsford. He's this guy from Japan who does these amazing wood carvings. I think of that as art. Mm. And I do not regularly think of the kinds of things that we make as being more art. And Seth has kind of been on this mission. I don't know if he'd describe it as much, but he wants more everyday people in what they're doing to be creating art.
Right.
And he kind of defines art outside of the space of what would be my typical headspace of like painting or those kinds of things. He brings it more into, well, we can just directly look at quotes from his book, but what I love about it is that it grounds it in a new way, and I almost wish that he had chosen a different word than art, because art has so much baggage for me.
I think that's what it is. It just has so much baggage.
It does. So I'm gonna read a little passage here that to kind of like kickstart where we can go with this next, because upon reflection and kind of interacting with Seth's thoughts here, I do feel there's some really important takeaways for what my experience has been in this past year, and then also where I want to stay centered on going forward and the things that I make. And I mean, let's just give a brief recap. I just spent 3 weeks in Hamilton,
yep,
in this van, just living that city life, hanging out.
Yeah.
Stopping by the studio every day.
It's great. It's a good time.
Being a pain in the butt. I bought a one wheel.
How's it been? You've still been using it, I'm assuming?
In general, it's been amazing to be able to park somewhere, hop on a device. And I had this conversation with someone. We visited another friend's studio, and one of their editors noticed that I had this one wheel. And he was kind of just like, isn't that kind of just something that hipsters get? Like, what is the point? Mm. And I was kind of like, what you're trying to say is, why don't I just ride a bike or do physical activity?
Yeah.
And he was, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And I was trying to help him understand, it is okay to invest in something that costs money because it is fun. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, that's totally... I mean, most of the people buy like $5,000 mountain bikes, right? It's not uncommon at all, and it's just because it's fun.
Right.
You can buy a $400 mountain bike.
With a mountain bike, you can justify that you're getting some sort of health boost out of it.
Sure, of course you can, but not... I mean, you're not getting 5,000 to 500, you know, that 10x... You're not getting 10x
right.
fitness, right? If anything, you'll get more fitness out of the crappy bike because you got to work harder.
I, as a previous bike mechanic, I disagree thoroughly, but that is okay.
I don't know anything about bikes.
I don't need to win you over on this bike discussion right now.
Well, here's where we started. You said you spent 3 weeks here, you know, at the studio causing chaos, bought a one wheel. And then we're like, perfect, let's talk about one wheels. But you were going somewhere.
Oh, it was just to say, paint a picture that we've spent a little bit more time. It kind of felt like I was living in Hamilton for a little bit.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that kind of, I appreciate moments like that where it feels you can get to know what someone's work style is like a little better. Yeah. And we actually recorded a podcast in your studio kind of about the work style and me just being baffled by your process. And so that one will be, stay tuned for that one.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of the things that we had talked about together is just, what is the point of some of the things that we are making right now, and how are we going to keep finding meaning in it? And if we don't find meaning in it, what do we do next? Because it's convenient to be making internet videos. That's something that Jesse and I spend a lot of time doing right now, creating a video, putting it onto the platform of YouTube, and then generating money from that, from the things that we sell on our own, from the sponsors of the videos, and just from the ads that Google occasionally places. So there's a practicality to it where it can be just functionally a job because it makes the money. But then both of us have this inner unsatisfaction when it is just a job.
Yeah, I mean, we've had a lot of conversations about this, but I don't know where it's going, right? Because for me, this isn't like I've made it. I still feel like I'm like building towards something, but it's weird when you can't articulate what that something is.
I agree. It is weird. And maybe it's the ongoing process of trying to articulate it that brings you to some state of higher thought process that is actually making it, which means that you don't care about all the external things and you're just satisfied with yourself in silence, which seems terrifying.
Yeah.
I want to pull up this quote from Seth as a little springboard here, and I have two excerpts from his latest book. The book is called The Practice of Shipping Creative Work, and he's got a heading in one of his early chapters. I'm not far into the book. And the heading is, "This is art." And lower down, there's a quote that says, "Painting is something that you do to a house. Art is the work we do when there is no right answer. And yet the journey is worth the effort."
Yeah, that is really interesting. You're right. Because I guess painting's an easy one to think of because we paint for two reasons, right? There's a practical painting and then there's an artistry of painting.
Yes.
Is that same true for video?
I do think so. And I think to even springboard off that further, he does have this longer section in the following chapter. And I'm gonna go into this. And this was the section that I was worried of Jesse's gonna think that I'm just trying to be posh by quoting books here. I was worried that you're gonna give me a hard time about this, but I'm fully committing. I'm gonna read this excerpt and
welcome
then I'm
to the Levi Allen Book Club.
This is a section that I want to read. Perhaps you can make some art. Art is what we call it when we're able to create something new that changes someone. No change, no art. When we ship our best work, at least our best in this moment, we have a chance to turn it into art, and then we have a chance to do it again. It's a form of leadership, not management, a process without regard for today's outcome, a commitment to the journey. You were born ready to make art, but you've been brainwashed into believing that you can't trust yourself enough to do so. You've been told you don't have enough talent, but that's okay because you can learn the new skill instead. You've been told you're not entitled to speak up, but now you can see how many others have taken their turns. And you've been told that if you can't win, you shouldn't try. But now you can see that the journey is the entire point. And he closes with, art is the generous act of making things better by doing something that might not work.
It sounds nice. Don't you ever get exhausted, though, of just this idea? It's like, just the journey is the process. And I know it's true. Or the journey is the process. The journey is the point or whatever. I get that it's true. Sometimes I just wish someone's like, actually, everything's different. We figured it out. It is the destination that matters. Here is the destination. You know how good that would feel?
That would feel fantastic. And that's what, I mean, all these online products and courses are selling, a step-by-step process to get to those locations.
Right. It's a lie.
It's hopefully there's stuff within that course that could change you and be beneficial,
but
the way it's being
marketed. You're right. The marketing is the lie. The marketing is
yes.
That we found it. We found the answer. And I'll tell you how to get there in, you know, four easy payments. I mean, steps, four easy steps.
And I mean, we talked about this with education, that what I care about most in the stuff that I do with Adventure Film Academy and the lessons that you put together with Moment are actually changing the person who does it. Because it's one thing to just make a thing and market it well and sell thousands and thousands, but that isn't stimulating to our personalities that much, especially when it's got parts of us involved in it. And it's this concept of wanting to make a thing that is able to change the person who's experiencing it. And so I don't feel like an artist by any stretch. And I'm not sure if the feeling matters as much as when I look back at what I've found the most meaning in, I think, are these moments that Seth has kind of redefined as art, which is a generous act of making things better by doing something that might not work. And when I go, when have I felt like an artist? Like, when are those moments? And for me, it's definitely the bigger high emotional spike moments, like the premiere of my first film with an audience.
Right.
That for me, there's an experience that I had that was 6 months in the making of, will I actually be able to finish this film? Will I be able to show it to people? Will it be good? And then to have it playing on a big screen with hundreds of people in the room reacting to the moments that I had set up on screen, that felt like art to me. And the trippy thing is, I would like more of that feeling. Maybe feeling is, I would, if that is art to me, I want to make sure that the processes I'm setting up in my life for the things I make are more aligned with that than the routine where I already kind of know the outcome before I set out and make it. I'm okay with punching in the clock, creating a tutorial, and having it be done. But the process of creating and releasing a tutorial doesn't necessarily have that art-like quality to it where I'm unsure if it's going to work.
Hmm.
And so this is where I want to circle back. What I love about the intro of the video that we're talking about at the top here,
yep,
you basically end up just duct taping yourself completely, and it is so unclear.
What's going on?
What is going on?
Yeah, it's chaos. It's just madness.
And I'm not sure if me, the viewer watching that, I'm not actually sure if I'm being changed or what's going on. But what I do know is that in your process of creating it, you couldn't have known what the outcome would be for me watching it as you're setting about doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, that's true.
And you say as much in the video. You go, we don't really know what we're doing, but we took an idea and started. And that to me, Jesse, is the art part of this regular internet video creating. And I think when I'm finding myself without being pulled forward by meaning, it's because I'm not including the components that are legitimately unknown outcomes.
Yeah, yeah. So you think that's what, like, what the times when you're unhappy with the creative process, do you think it's because there's a lack of that?
Yes. And my brain immediately goes to this grandiose, okay, what's going to be my next film? What's going to be my next massive project? And I think if I incorporated layers of it might not work more into the week-to-week process, the whole experience of being a creator in this moment could be improved. And by me making things that are more tapped into that headspace, could add better things into the lives of people that watch them. And they're not just meaningless videos that people are clicking on and then clicking away from. They're actually maybe being more meaningful to those who watch them too. So meaningful to me, the maker of them, and the meaning more meaningful to the person who experiences it.
Right. That's the hope. I mean, I think, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think there's a bit of a, like a, we might yin and yang each other here. So I think almost all of the like internet videos I make have a lot of like, I don't know where this is going and I don't know what's going to happen. And like, I get that you could argue maybe that's the art part of it, but it's exhausting, right? I'm definitely missing a certain like structure that I think is just mentally overwhelming to not have that, to not have that system and those structures that actually make it sustainable. I think I often find myself lost too much in the, I don't know what I'm making. I don't know where this is going. And then I find myself like, I'm just wandering. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah, it does, Jesse.
I don't know how to live. I think it is very like beautiful to think of art as this like as this journey, as this like wandering and like searching, but then like, or like there's got to be a practicality to it.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, do you want to start your own podcast? Head over to Transistor and use my coupon, transistor.fm/Justin. You'll get 15% off your first year of podcast hosting.
Right. I mean, if you think of it like life. So you brought up like you came to Hamilton, you stayed with us for like 3 weeks and it felt like just being here. And that's something I think about a lot. So a lot of people are like, you know what? If you want to have experiences, you have to travel and go to new places. And me, I love travel, but I love like I'm a part of a city. I'm a part of a community. I'm a part of like being rooted in a place. And I think that's an experience a lot of people miss out on when they're spending their life being like, search for new experiences. It's like there's a big experience that you're missing by not like diving deep in something. But I think my creative process is the opposite. I think my creative process, I'm stuck more in this wandering phase.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like, I think what I need to learn how to do is like settle in somewhere, see what it feels like to be rooted in maybe a genre or a style of videos, or at least have an idea of what the heck I'm doing. I don't know if there's an actual parallel to be drawn there, but it feels true.
I think the listener at home, I think, is going to be encouraged by hearing you say things like that. If you aren't familiar with the videos Jesse makes, a lot of the people who are click on them because it feels like a Jack in the Box Easter egg style experience where you legitimately are unsure of what Jesse's going to bring to you in this video.
That's the hope.
Jesse is so fed up of people in his life telling him the special part of his videos is Jesse.
That is true.
That is not helpful to be told when you just want to figure out what to make next. Mm. Put me in it. That's it. I was trying to understand with you how you could feel less stressed about the ambiguity of where
creating,
do you begin
yeah.
for the next video. But I guess as an affirmation, yes, I do think you are creating art in these videos, and a question of actually sustaining your life and making money, and where the commerce comes in is how reliable is it to have your month-to-month process be pinned on the creating of things where you don't know the outcomes?
Hmm. I mean, we're always trying to kind of balance the artistry and the business side of this, right? You kind of have to. And where I often get stuck is I know my niche on YouTube very well. And I know there are avenues that I can take within this niche that are much more profitable. I know the videos, the kind of videos that people want from me, or they don't even necessarily want from me, but that they'll click on from me. Certainly not what they need from me. Like more gear-focused videos, more new gear-focused videos, more like the things you need to be a filmmaker type videos. Mm-hmm. Making those just from like affiliate kickback alone can be incredibly lucrative. And B, you can make 10 different videos on all the new iPhones and, you know, and get hundreds of thousands of views per video. And that's a good way to run a business. But it's like, if we're talking about artistry as being like, art is the thing that changes people, I'm not convinced making those videos is changing people for the better.
Right. It could be even reinforcing some values that make you feel icky.
Yeah. Really icky. Sticky icky.
The quick quip response from some people posing what you just said is, oh, well, then just do some videos like that and some videos like the other. And I think that is a similar response, at least I've been hearing for a while when I share similar sentiments. And it doesn't always feel that simple for some reason for the way that it doesn't feel that simple for me. And I am almost jealous of people that they do it. It seems that they're doing that process simply. They're doing both and having my feet in both worlds is very challenging.
Yeah.
I think what you're describing with the videos that we know might be more accessible for people to click on, might be more marketable on the surface. I think the reason why those are incentivizing is because they're outcome-based. You can know this video will do better even if the quality of the video isn't necessarily better.
Yes.
And so there's a level of certainty there. And I think what I'm going to keep trying to figure out for me is, if I'm doing activities like that, how do I make sure I'm still doing things that I don't know the outcome? Because I think outcome-based approach is just drilled into us from the absolute start of our lives in this modern time of, hey, do things that you know will work.
Yeah.
Do the processes you know will work and reap the rewards of the outcomes. And I've never been great at following that advice. And it's, and when I look at the moments that I've cared about most and the moments that I care about least, it's almost always split directly along the line of these things I didn't know the outcome of before I did them. And this category, I thought I knew the outcome, and either the outcome happened or didn't, but it doesn't matter because that level of certainty isn't usually a helpful guide for, because I've fallen into the trap of thinking, yeah, gear videos is an easy click through on my channel. And turns out on my channel, they just aren't.
Right.
And so I've thought I've gone for this like outcome-based thing. Oh, I can just phone this one home, get the affiliate revenue and move on with my life and it'll be fine. And then I've been just double disappointed when that doesn't work.
Right. You're like, what? I cheated myself and it failed?
Yes. So, I mean, to kind of tie back to a meaningful way forward is what motivates the art process. And I'm not even convinced after reading Seth's book here, I don't know if I'm going to take on that artist banner for myself.
Yeah.
I don't feel like an artist and that's okay. But what I'm realizing that in my life, as we move more towards the maturing of filmmakers is the wrong word. As we mature towards people that can produce videos that are thoughts and ideas in video form, we've now been doing this for a while. There's this desire to go, what's next? What do we do with it?
Yeah.
And I find myself in that place. Do you find yourself in that place?
Oh, definitely. I'm stuck in that place all the time. That's what I'm saying. It's like, I'm really good at being settled physically in a place, but mentally, like in my, I don't know how to settle in. I'm always like, I'm not there yet. Where am I going? Where am I moving towards? Like, is that the question you're asking?
I'm just asking if you're resonating with that thought process at all of, hey, I've now developed a skill set. What do I do with it?
Yeah.
And I think at first video was really enticing because there's all these unknowns.
Yeah. It's infinite possibility.
How do you get blurry backgrounds? How do you get slow motion? How do you get a smooth camera pan? Like all these, how do you star wipe?
Whoosh. Yeah.
There's all these things that are enticing and each video, it's so tangible of where the pitfalls are. But now it almost feels like we're at a place where we can turn a dial of this is how much production effort I want to put into this because this is how much it's worth. And we can turn a dial forward or back of production value and we just know it better than before. Yeah. And so that layer of there's no longer new things. And I think this is probably why filmmakers that are like the Christopher Nolans of the world are so enticed by doing films on, you know, quantum physics of black holes and things like that, because that is a new realm.
Right. I think you're right. And help me try and parse this out for a second in my own mind, because I've been trying to figure out, I don't want my audience to be gear obsessed, or like, I don't want them to be tech obsessed or whatever, blurry background obsessed, all of that. Right. And I'm trying to figure out like, what is, if you were to try and categorize my whole channel 5 years from now, what's the running theme? And I want it to be more about like the stories that people tell. I want people to love filmmaking because of the ability to transmit ideas and to change people. And my fear is that just like, sure, I can show you how to use a gimbal. What are you going to do with it? Right? Mm-hmm. And so I'd love to try and find a way to position my videos, my channel, my art in such a way that is more about what are you going to do with it than it is about what are you doing or what do you have or what are your skills? Because I think, I mean, YouTube in our niche is flooded. There's a million videos that will teach you pretty much everything you need to know to make a video.
Yeah.
But I think there's a lack of videos that are helping you figure out what is your video going to be.
And the discouraging part for me is I've tried to do some pieces of video around that concept, around the buzzword of story. And you're right in the sense of those ones are less marketable.
Yeah. How do you make people care?
How do you give them what they want, but one to punch them with what they need? So package it with what they think they want. And I think this is what your videos do pretty well when you do these gear videos, the occasional time, is that it's giving someone what they want, but then you always find a way to make sure that some of your art makes it in. And that's what makes your videos really stand out to me, is this sense of, you know, you don't know if when you click on something, if you're going to get practical tips for finding music or getting to see a creative wrap himself in duct tape to make a dummy with studio mates.
There's this British rapper named Dave that I really like. Not Dave, Lil Dicky. His name's Dave. It's great. And he has this line that's like, I'm a hit maker if you haven't noticed. He says something like, what's the point of being the greatest if no one knows it? So he's like, he intentionally will rap some of his songs in this like catchy hook pop culture, not because that's what he wants, but he was like, he knows that if he has a message to tell or a story to tell, or he really is the greatest rapper alive, he's like, what's the point if no one knows it? And so I think about that all the time in terms of these videos, where how do I both make it, and I'm not even like, and I figured it out in those videos, this is like big picture, how do I get people to click on what they think they want, but deliver them what they actually need, right? How do I take this, a video, right, that we are trying to teach maybe the art of storytelling, but market it inside of what, a gimbal video or a drone video or something stupid that doesn't actually matter, that doesn't actually change people?
Yeah, that's great.
I don't know. Man, so ask me in 5 years. We'll see if that ever happens.
I appreciate being able to be in this train of thought more so than I feel. I almost always am in a state of there's aspects of what I'm currently doing that I want to change or want to do better at or whatever. And I think the hard part about doing the type of work that we currently are spending a lot of time doing, internet videos, is that they're inherently built around outcome-based metrics.
Yeah.
And those metrics are public in a sense where your peers can see them. You know your peers can see them. You're aware of your dynamic within the community of other people that make videos. You're aware of the audience that is watching your videos. And you're aware of, hey, this is me wanting to make things that I find meaning in. And I just don't know if we were ever built to manage that many different points. Like, if I think back to, I'm not an art historian, but I just can't help but imagine that having this many points of opinion always hinging on the thing that you're going to publish tomorrow is such a trippy way to be trying to make things that add value.
Yeah. I think something that I was just kind of envisioning was that, right, as we balance, as we try anyways to balance the, you know, the artful side, the creative side, and the business side, so that you can actually keep doing the artful creative stuff, I think there's burnout on both sides. There's burnout on if you are only doing the business side, right? If you're not actually fulfilling the reason you got into video in the first place was because you want to create things, you want to tell stories or whatever. But I think you can also, like, I've experienced this more recently, which is like burnout from that lack of structure. When it's just like, I don't know where I'm going to go. What'll this be? You know, I'm just Jackson Pollock throwing cans of paint at the wall and then being like, this sucks. You know, I've thrown all the different cans and I'm not any happier. So there's a burnout from not having structure, and there's a burnout from being overly structured. Mm-hmm. So you're like, balance this line and just walk this tightrope between what you want to do and then what you need to do in order to keep doing what you want to do. It's exhausting, man.
But don't worry, there's a 5 steps article out there that is the answer.
Yeah, perfect.
That Seth will Godin tell book. You. I think people might eventually get, you were worried about this, that people would feel unsatisfied listening to us talk about these things because we're never going to end up at a place of, okay, this is the process, do this.
Yeah. Well, I really didn't want to try and pretend that we had some kind of answers right. that we don't have, that we had this five step. Sorry, I have like burps all of a sudden.
That's okay.
Yeah. Also, this is a quick side tangent that's not for the podcast. I did just see a text pop up. Hey, Jesse, just heard back from Skillshare. You're approved to post. Heck yeah. Friendly reminder to include the following above the fold. First, and a link. Sick.
Sweet. Let's get that thing published, man. Let's do it. Let's wrap this up.
Yeah, that's exciting. So as soon as we hang up, video's going live.
Video's going live.
That feels good. Make sure you pull it up on all your devices and let it play through the whole video. I need that watch time. Okay, sorry, carry on.
Do you have any ideas for segments to wrap this up? Do you have any segment ideas? Any bits? Any concepts?
No, I would love to brainstorm some like wrap-up segment ideas in the way that like Dad's right. It's like, all right, like just the very simple, we'll talk about our running for the week. Want to know a quick update?
I do.
So I had my first psychological assessment, my first meeting with a psychologist.
Ooh, can we do a whole episode about this?
Yeah, I think we should. So I'm just going to give you the quick preamble.
Because
there's not a whole lot of progress. So for those who don't know, for those who have watched my videos, this is probably obvious. But Levi, like you've known that you have ADHD for how many years?
I was pre-diagnosed pretty young.
Yeah.
And then there was not direct action that was taken off that very specifically. And in my later years, I got officially re-diagnosed, I think when I was 19 or 20.
Okay.
As like adult ADHD.
Right. So you're like coming up on, you know, nearly 10 years.
Yeah.
So I've mostly always assumed that I did. And everyone in my life is like, yeah, of course you do. But I've never really felt like compelled to get assessed or look into medication or anything like that. Because I've had a few friends that had negative experiences on medication where they just felt like parts of themselves were stripped away in a way they didn't like. Mm-hmm. And so I've kind of avoided it. But this past year has honestly been so difficult that I've been finding myself like really like trapped in my own head. I'm like, maybe I should look into this. And so I paid a psychologist. I got it assessed. And got to the end. It was like $200 and something. And she's like, yeah, obviously you have ADHD. I just think it's so funny that I paid so much money for a professional to tell me what everyone in my life has always told me. Moving on from there, I still have to make an appointment with my family doctor and have conversations there about whether or not they think that medication is a route I should pursue. And truthfully, I'm still quite hesitant, although curious about it. So I think we should have a whole episode where we actually talk about that, because I'm often surprised by how many people in our field, in this creative industry, have very similar minds.
I mean, for most people that end up getting diagnosed, a big part of it is the diagnosis, period. Regardless of whatever treatment, whatever's get put together with health professionals, hearing from someone, yes, just gives you, it's certainly not an excuse, but it gives you a toolkit to then go.
Yeah, there's a comfort to know that it's like, oh, I'm not just lazy or stupid. I'm not just whatever. There's more going on than I'm aware of.
Jesse, is there anything that you would like people to do today?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't thought this through.
While you're thinking about it, I'll tell the people at home. If you appreciate discussions like this, clearly we're new at this. We'd love to hear if it's resonating with you. Hit us up on the Twitters, the Instagrams, kind of let us know what's going on. If you appreciate it, you can send me an email, levi@leftcoast.co. I read everything that comes in the inbox. Don't respond to all of it. And we just love to know if this is resonating. And if it does, clearly it's helpful to just take this one episode and send it to one friend and just say, hey, this is a conversation that made me think of you. You should listen. That would mean a lot to me.
I don't know what the kind of audience of people listening to this are, but assuming that there are other video makers, right? I know we want to
talk to makers of any kind.
I know, but I mean, right now, specifically with video makers, I mean, sure, let's talk to makers of any kind. I hope people remember why they got into it in the first place. One of the things that I'm like, especially have been so thankful for about this studio of multiple people is just the joy of making videos with your friends. You know, I got into video because of skateboarding, because of school projects, and because of just making videos with your friends. And it's really easy to lose that when you grow a business or when you have clients and you're just trying to make money, it's really easy to just forget about the joy that is that brought you to doing it in the first place. So if at all possible, do something today that reminds you of why you did it in the first place.
Could you imagine if this podcast chronicled the journey for us taking video back into a place of it just being a hobby and we get other jobs?
Yeah, we just become accountants.
That's what I think accountants is the worst idea you've said on this podcast so far.
I think you're correct.
We would not be good at that.
We'd be horrible accountants.
That would be an interesting outcome of this whole sharing the process of making is, well, you actually decided it'd be better to make just for the joy of it and not for the business of it.
I honestly screwed ourselves over. I sometimes do think that might be in the cards for me someday.
Yeah, that's certainly not an outcome that would be bad.
Yeah.
I don't think.
In fact, I know people that have gone that route and I respect it so much. People that were freelance designers and things like that decided they didn't want the business part of it to be so wrapped up into it.
Or the people that are fantastic artists and you're like, you could do that as your job all the day, all the time, make all the money.
Yeah.
And they don't. And now I'm realizing maybe they were probably onto something.
Yeah. Yeah. It's possible. But I mean, Kevin and I were talking this year that like, I feel like you grow up being told so much, like find the thing you love and turn that into a career, right? Do the thing
you
love.
Your passion. Yeah.
But it's okay to do things just because, like, they don't have to be your job. If you want to rock climb, you don't have to be a rock climber, right?
Professional one-wheel aspirer over here. This is where I'm going with my life, Jesse.
You could just do the thing just for the joy of it.
Mm.
And I think that's as respectable, if not more, than how do I turn it into a profitable venture? But it's also fun to turn it into a profitable venture.
We will see you next week if we get the episode up on time, which is not very likely, but maybe it will be.
Might be. Great news. GarageBand still recording. QuickTime still recording. It's a 40 gigabyte file on QuickTime. What on earth?
Well, because you picked maximum.
Yeah, apparently. No.
Okay. Jesse, love you, bud.
Love you, dude. Bye.
Should I not say bud? That sounds condescending. Someone's going to say that's condescending.
Love you, bro.
We would love to continue the conversation with you on the Twitters. Use hashtag MakeStuffClub to get our attention. You can also find us at Jesse Driftwood and The Levi Allen, both spelled out in the show notes down below or wherever you find them in your podcast app. This episode was edited by me, Levi Allen. Our theme music is by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Oh, that is fun to say in our own podcast after loving Mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder's tracks. We hope to be back in your feeds this time next week if we get the show up on time. Peace.
Podcast hosting is provided by Transistor.fm. They host our MP3 files, generate our RSS feed, provide us with analytics, and help us distribute the show to Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and more. If you want to start your own podcast or you want to switch to Transistor, go to transistor.fm/Justin and get 15% off your first year.